Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
thoughts on a research article about a Internet of Things module, basically a little attaché case, see-through attaché case. Students open up in the classroom and can start up on inquiry learning. So just, I suppose I'm in rehab, permanent rehab, trying to do things. And it's sort of a real strange combination in terms of that you have this knowledge and you have things that you're up against, sort of trying to I remember how to do things. And so you constructing a circuit's quite good because the circuit's always there. So your brain can fade a bit, but the circuit's still there. It's still broken. It still has to be advanced. So let's quickly describe what the circuit is. So and the main point of this one is to talk about the grief I'm going to in terms of writing this research article. The overall concept, I don't know whether I've really thought through it, so just landed in your lap. And this is one of the things I want to actually make is that we're limiting ourselves if we just create structured thinking. I think that's the way we go. If we think that teaching people is crank the handle, do the same, look around for the best that's been done before, listen to people, talk about the old days, how they were really glorious, and then say, shucks, will I ever be as good as you? No, you'll never be. So sort of departing from that, sort of looking at what you can do. Now, so certain things is that what's happened is that people have generally changed the rules of what they're teaching, such they're very successful at what they're teaching. And what's happened is the world has moved on. We have to teach new things. And this sort of closed formula of promoting and giving rounds of applause, sort of like classical music, and the kids are listening to transistor radios and jiving about the place, and you're still correct saying classical music is beautiful, but it still hasn't got the full context and spontaneity going through, and it's coming overall. Now, what I'm having now is, I suppose, going through a system of brain fades and just trying to, I suppose, speak my way back to health. So what I've done is I've realised that there's this enormous complexity, and that enormous complexity can be put into PLC, robot-controlled circuits. They can be put in a plastic box, and the plastic box can be given to teachers, and it's sort of like a plastic interface box, so you're no longer a threat to them. The sort of threat is contained inside the box, and it's like a general container, and it's sort of leveraging the standard iPhone phenomena. People buy a product of technology, they buy this box. Now these boxes, so this technology housing is a fundamental concept here. I don't know how to actually put that in the paper. So there's the psychology of packaging, and it's not just spatial packaging, it's actually concept packaging. So the idea is that once you have a crystal box, any idea can be put in it. It's that high level things. Now, did I plan for it? No, it spontaneously came across. I just had these boxes, began to assemble things in it. So I've probably got three boxes in the row. One box is just a dancing duck in a magnetic field made from bits left over from when I smashed them up. And smashing them up sounds reckless, but in general, you just basically, you don't have a supercomputer, you have basically a power supply, and knowing that if you run it at 110%, the thing that's going to fail first is the thing that you fix up, and then you've suddenly got a far more robust object. So that's how this first box came up. And inside it has a indeed a dancing duck that is a small rubber duck with a magnet up its bum, and the magnetic field switches. Now, the magnetic field switching is for quantum mechanics demonstration box, and quantum mechanics box. Now, listen to it. Children interacting with it, you can, as a research thing, you can say, oh, well, I'll put a capacitive switch on it. And then what music, and then what lights. And so I just have to plan for the ordering of the various things to come through. And you can see certain things without advertising. You see it works. They can actually see through the box. And the idea of the capacitance and that type of stuff goes through. So that's spontaneously gone ahead. Then, so the general principle here is that there's a sort of new connection, which is direct connection, not through this entire enormous market system, but between, I suppose, an educator and kids, but enabled with technology, enabled to allow it to go across. Now, the advantage is that, well, sort of once I've done it, I can give this box off to someone else, and then they can do it. It's sort of like the equivalent of text, sort of like before the printing. It's hard to say. We're in an age of the Gutenberg press. We can now print out components. Just checking. Oh yeah, I'm just making sure I don't get lost on the way here. So I'm going off to have a blood test, as people will know, and my brain's having a little bit of a brain fade, brain collapse, and it's maybe working too hard for too long, but also the fact that other people are missing the point and they don't know it, that's almost too much for me. That's too hard to get through. So I'm reading research papers, and there's several steps off the money of addressing in a realistic fashion what should be done. So, and neither am I, but I'm perhaps problem solving sort of the natural way of getting your soldering iron, getting bits, ordering to get through. Now, the other thing is the quantum de Haas pendulum, and basically that's now really robust simply because I've wrecked bits and put it back into the duck. So that's another box, and you just plug it in and it runs. And I think I spotted a software problem. I can't imagine it's still there, but that's a set aside. Then I'm working on the sensor box, slightly a little bit different. You have the box, and what happens is at this stage you've got 14 sensors, 10 temperature sensors, five K cell sensors. Now, for some, chip sensors. Now, a chip sensor doesn't work, you know, you're fried if you go above 150 degrees. So I stick in the Bunsen burner flame, kiss your ass goodbye. And five of those, five thermocouples, three into one mass sensor, pH sensor, and two pressure sensors. And putting them all together, and what happens is that I've gone through, I suppose, a learning stage. I suppose the worst learning stage is where I accidentally wired a data circuit wire into the comms wire, and it was just having its own little epileptic fit. It's just so hard to diagnose it, and that's the sort of thing that you're sort of struggling to recuperate and stuff like that, and you make mistakes. It's sort of not like a big social mistake, or you know, you're driving a piece of heavy machinery, it causes a crash. Yes, a circuit which doesn't work, and you go along, you know, day to day, you're struggling one after the other. It's sort of like I suppose like the a bit like the village idiot, you know, oh, fuck off, we're playing cards, fuck off, we're doing this, so you got to wander out, and little by little you wander each day, and you start to wander to a Shangri-La field, go back and forth, and you're still, obviously, the village idiot is still going very slowly, but this is definitely it. People have been with me as I slowly, I think there's probably 70 souls. I sort of upset a group of, I don't know, hard to say, 40 people have suddenly stopped, switched off while boring and stuff like that. There are a few other people who are listening, and as I've gone through this thing, just really fighting step by step. So I've got this circuit system together, and there's the the idea that a group of thermocouples I bought were very, very cheap, and I now know why they're not suitable. They rust, and they don't go beneath 0 degrees Celsius, and you can buy cheaper ones, better ones, cheaper, if you just look. Yeah, so stop and fix that. There's a sort of like a series of improvement sort of areas of, you know, how do you wire one of these babies up that so it doesn't look like a huge, you know, kindergarten's spaghetti junction. That's learning how to do that. Learning about DuPont connectors and how they're good or bad, and how they all sit together. So it's sort of the knowledge of that, and you have a sort of an order cycle now. Surprising, I can't believe it. This last order is for $100 from China. That's going to take a few days to come in. I just have to really remember. I really can't remember quite what I've ordered. I've ordered better thermocouples. Better thermocouple controllers. Is that right? I just want to think why. Oh yeah, there's two different types of thermocouple controllers. Just a few other things. I really can't. Oh, and DuPont connectors. Just sort of slowly modernising it. And so during that cycle, so you keep on. I've begun writing the research papers. Now, initially, it's been a really slow, hard transition. So initially, when I write the research papers, I realise, oh, well, what I'm actually working for is introducing this in parallel. I'm working in parallel with all these different stakeholders, trying to work it out. And so I've written that research paper up, and then read a few other papers for it. So it does get you in it. You can see hear all the Australian birds around the place at the moment. Just trying to work that out. You've got this break, and you've gone up and sort of learnt tiny little bits about how to put capacitive switches on, which is really, really simple. And I suppose order a few things. I've still got to look at basic things of backing things up. Things like, you know, I just shudder to think about all the things I have to do. So I've done basic things, and then the next order of things, people in, they want music and lighting in this. You know, the small kids want music and lighting for the duck, and you can do that. And I've sort of identified it. I sort of know to get together an order, review it once, review it twice. It takes about a week for me to review something, so it's sort of slow. Slow going, and sort of other things. While I'm waiting, put the servos on the measurers and stuff like that. So the idea here is just looking through it. You look through it. These servos, these mass measurement drift in milligrams per, it's a micrograms per minute, and you know, why do they drift, and can you avoid it? And so basically answering these questions, I'm going to get back onto the research paper, but they drift simply because the encapsulation is an epoxy, and the epoxy is also an environmental sensor. So you've got a mass sensor, which is also telling you about the humidity, temperature, time, all these things going into it. So so you can basically get a top of the range sensor, and a top of the range sensor, mercifully, they've sort of realised now that no one's interested in analogue signals anymore. So this top of the range signal has voltage and in and temperature, and rather than a very stretchy resistor with a epoxy on the surface of it, they have a micro machine Piezo welded to quartz, sort of no epoxy. Fuck off epoxy, and this is super regular, and you can sort of see this encroach into sort of premium applications. So in a shop where you're measuring something, you suddenly see one of these sensors up and running. Sensors cost a couple hundred bucks each, so one sensor as opposed to nothing. Well, I seriously mean nothing. So under a dollar for one of these sensors, and under a dollar again for the A to D. But it's there. So in order to get around that, I have these little servos, and every once in a while they lift up your weight, adjust it every couple of seconds, and then I can do software to actually work out bottle how it's been drifting and actually give you sensational results in a kiddie's version. So I've had to put the servos in, and then once I put the servos in, realizing that I have to make a bracket for it, seeing how I can make the bracket, going to 3D print it. So this is all linear type of stuff. I can control it and think about it, and you know, there's no time pressure. If I make a mistake, I can sit back and look at it, and I can capture it and sort of slow it. It's taken me a little bit of a while to, and basically the skill level has had to go up in terms of soldering, so you make less mistakes, and stuff like that to go ahead. And there's sort of a cycle in that if you didn't have a bit of a pause, you'd be down at the expensive Australian electronics shop, and you'd basically, it's a good factor, I would say, a good factor of 5 to 10 times more expensive. And of course, that's it. You know, how many people in Australia buy components? You've got this person sitting there making money, sort of making their family meal out of it, you know, sitting there. And so it's very expensive. So you have to actually modify things. So I've got these little servos which switch on, and a capacitive sensor on the dancing duck, which is fine. I've just got to check that I've got my card here for, yep, am I? I'm just having a check here that I'm having a blood test, but I have to have my different cards here. So keeping the cost down means pacing it. That is working on several projects at a time, and not only pacing it, and one of the projects obviously is writing up the scientific paper and forming connections there, and also sort of contemplating exactly where you stand. You know, do people have the time to listen to you? Or will they listen to you when the paper's published and everything's ahead? Or how do you do things? Now, yeah, contact with the sort of things like this, it just takes time. Like, I've read this paper into the podcast as a paper on education, being able to read it through thoroughly, nice and slowly, think about it, contact the authors, sort of realizing where things stand. And this has been, of course, in this time period of here, starting to write the research paper. And look, it's a recipe to fry your tiny little brain. Now, the problem is sort of like twofold. One is that you're stupid. You're really struggling to remember what you've written, the structure of it and stuff like that. And then you're looking at other people's, and they've sort of missed the point in a major way. Not a negative major way. They're just not in the inner space. They haven't asked, haven't thought, don't understand. And so for them, they... G'day. Yeah, it's a little dog as I'm going past. Yeah, so it certainly does your head in. So in this time period where I basically have an order for stuff, and I have to really get this stuff back and review the order and get things out. It boggles my mind how I've spent up to $100 Aussie on electronic components. They must be bloody good. I know I've bought some, and it's taken a little while to actually. Oh yeah, I think part of it is that I've sort of been looking at. Do I buy the actual temperature sensors, which are under $1 each, or do I pay $2.50, which translates to $4 each, for a properly, science sealed delivered waterproof container? Obviously, you want that because the kitty's going to put it in some water. You don't know how acid proof it is, you know, what its longevity is, but. One hopes. Now, I just can't fathom what's cost so much. I must have ordered something pretty neat in there. But I'll get in and look at it. So I've got the next set of orders, which is for a little buzzer. Again, the buzzer costs under $1. And a little 10-second Mimo chip for $20, including $20, $2, including speaker. So I've got to put that all together, and just plan, and obviously for up around 20, a flat electro luminescent sheet. So this is like a sheet of A4 paper, or it's actually less, and you hook it up and it glows, and it's like glowing paper. And the idea is to start putting that in to slowly move forward these modules as flagship modules. So I have the Einstein de Haas flagship module, Dancing Duck, and this other one which is taking a heap, and I have to write up the research paper. So I've written, would have read out the first version of the research paper. There you go. That was my dictaphone falling on the ground. And, okay, and bring it back in, it stopped. I have to put in part of this thing, is that there's 30 feet of, not 30 feet, well, in the old money, probably 20 feet of cord for this microphone, directional microphone, which I'm walking around back streets, the back streets of the Blue Mountains in, recording to, and yeah, it's recording there. So yeah, the first research paper I've sort of got into the structure of things, and I'm on to the second complete new draft. And sort of the issue, yeah, so the, like the major issue going across is that the way the world appears to a technologists tend to be pushed out of organisations, because organisations want to control the message inside. It's really important, and they get to be pushed in to vendors, you know, external things, in which they can utterly be controlled, such that when the customer wants to hear from that person, they can switch this person on to multiple customers. So it's like this, placing the component in the right position. So this being saying is sort of like I'm asking myself a deep question behind the place of what am I doing, and how come no one else has probably switched onto it? You know, what exactly is going on here? I think this is sort of that people are sort of basically look at the bottom line, getting things through, get the people in, and basically there's this zone of communication which can't go through between, say, the teacher world and the vendor world. It's like there's two separate things, and the vendor world has this strange thing of not doing new technology, but they actually translate the technology into the needs and wants of the buyer, such that the buyer buys from the vendor. But the technology is the same, the vendor's problems are the same, they add a conduit to it. Now, a vendor inside an organisation is toxic, because they'll be saying things. They work on a sort of a level of truth and logic, because essentially you know people are paying for information, they're paying for truth, and they're paying for logic, and they're really paying money to make up for the people that they have employed. So, I mean, really, their real need at the end of the day is to bridge the gap. Bridge their deficiencies. So I'm just having to have a drink as before this blood test. So this is an artful thing to actually drink as much as possible, but not succumb and have to go to the toilet, because it's the major thing is that you've got to increase your hydrostatic pressure inside you, so you just gush blood out. And that's one of the things, simple things I used to learn. To keep your arms nice and warm, but then do it. So hopefully I'll get that aspects up. So there's this fundamental thing. So I suppose gearing my brain down, it can actually work on a series of things. Of slowly improving measurements. Now in this case, what's happening is, because I'm building a project, it stays inside that project. And so an advance I make one day is like a permanent advance. And the actual management of it means just hitting the research projects. Now, the first iteration through, I sort of realised that I had to write it several levels, and reading some education research papers, I sort of began to produce something along an education research paper, which is sort of like it's quite honestly quite junk. You know, I would read it and say, oh, it's junk. That's simply because I suppose I'm a scientist, a research scientist. I want quality and citability. I can't cite anything in that paper because it's just stream of consciousness mind stuff, where their citing is into other stream of consciousness mind stuff. And it's sort of like taking the... it doesn't have the sophistication of a scientific paper, in that they have a scenario and a story, you listen to it. It's sort of like this is the way that humans have existed for a long time, that they have concepts and they put them across non-scientifically in the form of a story. And so you can, like a parable. And a parable, the great thing is that it appeals to kids, appeals to different stations. People can listen to it. It's imprecise and very slow. But you've got this parable and a story to go across. And you've got these other constraints in a parable, in terms of it's got to have a hero, a resolution, a beginning. It's got to have a story situation. So it's sort of like it's got lots of plus points, but it's really not, it hasn't got the rigor for scientific teaching. Like you'd say, look, the parable of the Good Samaritan. At the end of the day, if someone said, "Oh, look, there is actually no road between these two cities," off, you're off. And so the sort of scientific rigor test sort of eliminates you doing it, and a scientist reading it will go, "Oh, what's going on?" So, in order to actually address that need to communicate at all these different levels, she was, "I really hope I can hang on to get my blood test." Okay, yeah. So, to do it, I've had to try and sort of devise an introduction, so a multi-strand introduction, and essentially that's not the actual issue. I'd love to see someone gardening in this absolutely delightful house. There's a house with sort of Greek coloured, but I've seen the old chap out there, and it's got these beautiful eyes on the shed. Sort of, they put eyes on a boat eyes on the shed. It's such a beautiful concept. And going back, kids, when I had my automated factory, wanted to put eyes on the robot, little glass eyes. It's something which is really necessary. And perhaps for this, I should actually give me an idea, put eyes on this case. This is the children's case. That's interesting to go. Now, if I can say, therein goes sort of the fundamental issue that people are saying, look, we want to within the realm of scientific of education literature, they haven't got the foggiest idea about working together electronics and transforming things, but they have this fundamental model is sort of goes along these lines. We've been teaching from textbooks. We like teaching from textbooks because we can check that the person has taught from the textbook, and we can check that the person has learnt from the textbook by the students performing. So we can actually monitor how the teacher is going by looking at the marks and stuff like that. And then, of course, it's not been going well. Australia's been slipping behind the PISA scale. Everyone's been abandoning science because this is fundamentally a recipe for incredible boredom. Incredible boredom. So it's not working. So the logic is, what we're doing is not working. Therefore, it's an opportunity for the noisiest and most self-opinionated person to say what to do next. What to do next is inquiry. Now, in a certain sense, that is good, but it sort of says that inquiry is a state of mind, and really inquiry is inquisitiveness is sort of a personality trait, but it's not sort of it doesn't relate to a future life person, i.e. an inquisitive person really asks too many questions at the wrong time and misses out. So, really, inquiry is not the full story. It's innovation and how learning happens. And essentially, you're there in terms of your brain is just primed, and a stimulus comes along, and you have a brainwave. What to do it? Yeah, is this how science actually operates? A hell of a lot does operate that way. And in fact, scientists have recorded in that it's just walking along brainwaves. The brain is not a linear computer. It's heaps of things are going across, and so it's all the psychology. Now, as opposed to all of that, the solution is a mechanistic solution. Fault error here means that I lift my back and I pick up the next. I have a preference for solutions which can be published. I have a preference for solutions which can be put in memos and stuff like that. Because this is a solution which has got a different base. So the problem is basically flagging performance. The solution is inquiry learning. The problem is it's going over this hack and hack again. I don't know what this process is where I throw myself this is a second thing. I throw myself at a problem eventually. So it is really problem, solution, problem, solution. So problem, knowledge teaching is not enough. Solution that we select is inquiry learning. Now, that being said, that may not be a sufficient solution. But nonetheless, even if it is, that has an attendant problem of people don't know how to do it. And the solution is create a structure, a tick list plan, a structure for them to do it. Or, alternatively, you could look at environmental factors. So, kids aren't playing with a particular ball or whatever it is. You could play the right music, do all these things, but it's another factor of, do you put a smiley face on it? A smiley face on it which allows them to interact. So here you have a so the idea for them is that you have a tool, and one idea is a tool. So it's essentially training colleges are scaffolding things. They do exactly the sort of same thing. They get a student, a person who wants to be a teacher. They fuse in the scaffold. The person works out with the scaffold to go across. This doesn't work. Well, it's modified the scaffold, which is, I suppose, sort of one way of doing it. But then there's the other stuff of perhaps it is putting a smiley face on the ball of doing it, perhaps that they will engage with it if there are little dolls, you know, and perhaps that's what I should do. I should put a little in the Einstein de Haas experiment. I should put a tiny little Einstein doll in there to do it. And it's strange reason that we know. I'm walking past McDonald's. They have Happy Meals. It's all the world works in a far more complex way. It's going across. This is basically sort of along the lines of a Happy Meal, of a product that will identify. So it's this shell marketing. So I know the Happy Meal, but in that Happy Meal product I put all these different toys. I know I can associate it. It's got a channel to market. Now, this is completely outside the idea of teacher, here's your manual, here's a new manual to go ahead. Now, the thing is, it's really not teacher-centric in that it's, if I give someone a box and they just open it, and on the website, they type the name of the website in, or they look at the QR code on the box, scanned in, on the mobile phone, they can suddenly see their box transmitting data. And this is not, I suppose, necessarily a new concept, but it's sort of the implementation is relatively new. The issue is actually here, the actual key problem is actually diffusing it forward. So I've written an original introduction about sort of like the introduction hasn't worked, and so therefore I've re-engineered the introduction into something which is no longer recognisable as an introduction, saying, look, this introduction, I've got all these different stakeholders, I have to write a bespoke introduction for all these different stakeholders. And this next introduction is there's two modes of solution. There's fix the teacher or fix the product. One's an internal solution, and another one's a vendor solution. And what I mean by vendor solution is that vendors will aggregate micro solutions and reformulate them as a product for it. So this is understanding going forward. But importantly, it's not economic to do that. You've got to have a product which is sufficiently far away that it can be promoted and sold to multiple vendors, multiple points, and then evolved the market. So the market, it's got a diverse market entry point, and it's got a sort of a life cycle planned into it. Okay, we're just going on here. So it's just trying to get all those points. But I think just looking at it, I really actually think that writing is, as you read it, as I analyse it, is pretty sloppy. That is, you have an introduction sentence, like a header, a body, and a connector to every paragraph. And so you read it, and you can read it. What's the header? So that's a general structure. It's sort of like the internet protocol, where you have a header, content, and stuff like that. But essentially, it means that you've got to read it and you've got to translate it into a circuit. But essentially here, it's to actually get across. I'm going to have to stop speaking because I'm going into a shopping centre now towards my blood test. But yeah, the idea here is that... And for me, it's really confusing because I've researched this new mathematics, a new way of writing, and it's really question answer, question answer, and bifurcation point. And to actually argue that, I mean, I think the answer is that a lot of people don't do it. So we've got just to go through this. We've got a question. Why is Australia falling behind? Answer, we're not doing inquiry, enough inquiry learning. Question, why are teachers having difficulty doing it? Number one answer, which is consistent with the input, is that they are using an old scaffold. And given that the answer is, the question is, therefore, shall we re-engineer the way that the teaching is done, or shall we give them a new scaffold? Here's a new scaffold, the answer. And so this is a different point. Innovation... inquiry isn't happening because multiple answers. One is the nature of inquiry is not fully understood, articulated. There's not a lingua franca of inquiries or stuff like that. I'll have to stop here because people are giving me the odd stare as I'm walking down. There's that, but there's also there are other psychological factors. Now, going through this is, it's not an either or. These are multiple things which go across. Now, the problem with this, the linear mapping of writing, is that, firstly, it's got a huge cognitive load, because a linear sounds simple, but then you have to have your cognitive load to go across, and eventually people drop it. So, this really, really sets it up. So, and so in the introduction, people want to know the introduction makes sense of the structure, poses what the paper is about, and sets the structure. Now, this is, I suppose, one of the things I find, I suppose, a bit confronting. If the introduction has really essential subparts, shouldn't the actual word introduction therefore have introduction, problem, proposed solution, and methodology? Yeah, shouldn't you, and that's so you look at that, and you can actually look in the introduction at the moment. It's all, because it's all linearly posed, it's all over the place. Now I'll have to go and go in for a blood test. Okay, back recording. It would have been a large silence there as I had switched off my microphone, had a look at it. And so I've just finished my blood test, and as part of it, you have to drink a hell of a lot for it, and then it's just sort of all over Red Rover if you've absolutely got a high, I suppose, liquid layer. So what actually happens is you drink a lot of liquid, that liquid is basically stored in your bloodstream. You know, if you a little bit stored in your body, but a lot goes into your bloodstream. Your pressure doesn't go up because the arteries and everything expand to keep the blood pressure pretty much the same. However, it does mean that if you drink a lot, it goes through. I just have to wend my way up here, and I suppose the thing that I've had in terms of the epiphany is that yes, I do have this problem storing all people's detailed arguments together and stitching it all together. It's that it really doesn't make sense, it hasn't been thought through yet. People are in this stage of analysing it, and they're unaware that it hasn't been thought through. So it's sort of one of these strange things in that you're looking at these things. You know, your first hypothesis is that you're nuts, and that's true, and there are the deficiencies where you're trying to memorize things and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, there is this sort of lack of logic, and the sort of fundamental lack of logic, and it sort of goes into inquiry, is that this serial, sequential answering one question at a time, rather than seeing that there's multiple questions or multiple ways of going up to do it with multiple answers. Okay, so back again, and just see if this is working. Yeah. So you would have had a major thing, a short break, a silence, a short break, and this is a game. And I think the walks cleared my head in a certain way, in terms that there was a concept jam. Now, that is essentially, if you can imagine a sort of a flow chart or tree diagram of questions and answers, people have, I suppose, got an artificial serial question answer, which doesn't address a lot of issues going through. And me trying to actually work it out and trying to actually start up made it rather hard and hard to go through. So to go through like this is you could start off, the question is, why is Australia lagging behind in PISA, and why are these key factors? So, one question is, what are the key factors which cause concern? And then the second question is, what is the analysis of this? So you can do those. So it's interesting that often when you write a sentence, it's this and this, and then the people forget it. But if you write it in a tree diagram, you can say, what is causing Australia problems? We're lagging behind, and we're having a low retention rate. They're the two answers. But a second question is, what are the cause of concern? What is the cause of concern for it? So what is the analysis of it? What's the analysis of these general set of problems? Is that we're doing textbook learning, and and we don't have basically, when you get out to industry, people have got these diverse set of skills which we're not teaching for, and so people are turning off, so we should do inquiry learning. Now, what's the difficulty that we have in getting inquiry learning out? Well, their answer is, the one answer is, that we don't have the sufficiently broad scaffold. Another answer is that we haven't really scoped up the psychology of innovation and this sort of motivation, self-volition, where you actually you have a problem, but you can imagine yourself in the problem. And probably the third thing is that the instrumentation we have is very low on answers, and essentially the ability to manipulate multiple answers is a skill, and that is to take a high volume of answers, to compare them and go through, and that's a skill that we want to push forward. So I think that's the thing, and of course I'm sort of really hammering my head in terms of writing this stuff. You reach a no-go point where the paragraphs become slower and slower and slower, and it's sort of like picking away, and you can slowly get little bits of paragraphs together, but then you have to wipe it away. It's sort of a very slow structure, and this is to get the overall structure. So essentially the product offering has some of the following broad features. It's okay, I'm just going to have to wait here as this okay, that was an ambo going past. Of course, perhaps I'll let it go past there. Okay, yeah, so there's some broad... then the question is, so what are the distinguishing features in that terms of that it's an offering to... one of the, I suppose, problems of linear arguments is that people, when they've written a linear argument, can't actually see that if you have a parallel argument which doesn't interface with it, it doesn't go, and of course it's the actual linearly structuring it. So I suppose I find my with the brain a bit hard to go across it. So this is one of the answers, is that you can supply equipment which has a lower inquiry ignition overhead, a lower threshold to begin inquiry, and that may be the volume of data, the complexity of use, and parallel. Now, one of the things feeding back to an inquiry is that one of the things you have to do is a particular answer scopes out a particular generality case. So basically the data, the information gives you specifics. So some just trying to look at what the heck is happening in here. Wow. So this is talk about going forward. They've got this I think, yeah, it is indeed Oh no, it's not. I was going to say, my God, they've done the house next to it. So okay, the same thing. I thought, well, they've built a new house, but indeed it's just two separate houses. Although there's one aspect of build a new scaffolding, the other aspect is with the knowledge of inquiry, which is going from Pacific, as a Pacific has an implication for general. The Pacific. There's this relationship Pacific to general, and then from general back into Pacific. So is you using generalizations to find out about the Pacifics in this process, or you're just trying to scope new generalities. So in a sense, induction is really half the story. I suppose induction's a bit where it qualifies the generality. So let's look at that in a little bit deeper look. So let's get tunneling all the way down. This is where the action's at, and it's just, I'm pretty well sure that I can actually leverage my way into it. And just thinking of the way that people write a series of statements, there's sort of generalized motherhood rite of passage statements. That is, people, I stand here before you as your duly elected member. I've lived in the district for these statements actually do not, they legitimize your statement, but they actually don't, well, I suppose they qualify the speaker but not the actual information to flow. And so a lot of these generalized statements in introductions qualify. What I'm looking at is a little bit different in that, in terms of the overall solution to inquiry, support inquiry learning is better teacher scaffold, we can look at what the instrument does. Does the instrument promote inquiry or not? This is, I suppose, an instrument which promotes inquiry. And the reason is that the instrument, by producing more specifics into a general concept, allows a sort of greater intellectual flexibility. So, say if I have instrument, say if I have a single thermometer and read and it suddenly jumps 10 degrees for 10 minutes and then drops down 10 degrees for 10 minutes. Now that's a single piece of information and that has several interpretations. So single to general has a broader range of interpretations. However, if I had three thermometers in there and one did that and the others didn't, that would indicate that that thermometer had a problem. Or if I had three thermometers in one section and two other thermometers around the place, and those three thermometers went up and down, but one went up and down more in the center than the rear of this sort of the surface of the solution, it would indicate perhaps that there is a generation of heat within the solution itself. Oops. Generation of heat within the solution itself, and therefore I'll be able to tell so much more. So it's like the quantity of inputs go into the general to produce it. Where that actually sits with inquiry is a different thing. So a coroner conducts an inquiry, a scientist conducts an inquiry, they still have the same thing, but a coroner is basically qualifying specifics where as a scientist is qualifying generalities, if that makes sense, or the ideally a scientist is skilled to do that first one. So this is, I see this, but by doing more measurements, inquiring more, I can say this has attached a greater significance to it. So this is this is the process of I have some information, and the coroner conducts an inquiry, and at the end of the day, the data itself has general significance, that this blood stain means something, that this failure to act at this point in time is now significant because I've considered several generalities and increased the significance of it. Now that's one form of inquiry. As a scientist, I can go through and have a speculative generality, and which is, I've got no necessarily, it's got a probability, a likelihood for various reasons, but it's speculative, and I can actually qualify the generality, which is sort of a major point. Now, both of these things involve inquiry, but there's some other sort of basic things in terms of there is the casual experience, that is, where you become aware of things beyond your direct understanding and just be aware. So you can be, I was walking down and I hadn't noted it before, but usually the flowers are out in someone's front yard. This year they weren't there, and then I looked at it and I realised that they've got a dog instead, something like that. And the dog is caught. This is you're just have information streaming in all the time, and you sort of put that together and actually construct what's happening from it. So this is sort of like casual inquiry. So there's deliberate inquiry and casual inquiry. I'm going along and I see a window open, and then I inquire, has the house been robbed? I sort of look for other inquiry it's not been deliberate. I don't have a story there. I just have observations flooding in to put it there. So the question is that if I have a selection of devices, which is 10 thermometers in a drawer, or 10 thermometers which are automatically always on and always measuring in a box, how does that impact? Now, the answer is we don't know. It is speculative. And if you have a criteria that everything must be answered and proved, that's really, like, I'm going to be a non-speculative, an information laggard. You have to prove it to me first. We sort of can accept that. And the market mechanism changes and diffuses. The market mechanism sits in with this deployed intelligence. So rather than your inquiry being held within a process, a mental process, it's deployed, and a vendor is deploying skills and advertising them for the to be picked up. And so this is very much of a the process of the system as a delocalized smart system, where things are part of a flock. They're monitoring, and this is what we, a society, is. You there's yes, there are kings, there are servants, there's a lot of people in between, and say kings and servants aren't, or kings and queens and servants art that all the time. There's a lot of time you spend in between where the information is is coming in, and you're just observant outright. And this always-on aspect of observation really reflects us and the ability to make spontaneously motivated connections and opportunities, really exploit what we are as individuals. So I suppose that's a competitive advantage, that you've got a group of 10 individuals, but one is, I suppose, looking the ground for nuggets of gold and can see it, whereas the other people would, who have got instructions to deliver the eggs from the hen house to the main store, they're not going to get up. Now, the important thing is there, in that case, is that the story of that going through gets transferred. So that's a sort of like a deeper aspect of it in terms of coming through. So the entire reason for, say, the boxes is that it's hard to say. That, like, people say, well, it must follow this. This is the clear boxes. It must follow a story of deliberate planning, because that's the way I've been trained to think. But one can say, look, I don't know how it happens. I've just picked these boxes up, built it this way, and sort of gone and feel. It's sort of like someone with getting to know the size and paint and composition of colours, see how it goes. It's a very much a networked the knowledge and the actual I don't know, it's sort of a neural network theory that is that the knowledge is not confined in an individual or a number. It's networked, and networked across many, many different things. It's networked throughout the individual, it's networked throughout their group, and it's networked throughout the group. And so what happens is that this insight really goes to a process of one of the sort of hidden things is that the old thermometer, the old scales, has the thing of a very private individual self, and reinforces the idea of the private unindividualed, the individual person, and then they network the information at the end when it's been qualified, and it's really safe to do it. Whereas if you have something like this, everyone can see what's going on. It's no longer an individual stuff. Now, you can complain about it, but that's what's happening. So every soul cell that I see here, and unfortunately I don't see too many soul cells in this thing, is reporting back to computers their performance. They're continuously reporting back, and it's not just through a fine route. So I think that's a fine thing to actually look at two aspects of inquiry. One is inquiry in a social community, as a community function, and that unfortunately means that you can still test things, but you can test things in a more complex way. So if you have a requirement that test results must produce meaningful data. So this is one of the things, is that we have to construct tests which produce don't produce false positives or false negatives. And as a part of a process, the education process requires it, but it's actually not the the learning process. So it is true that individuals may or have a certain, say you have a learning activity and 90% learn about a thermometer to a certain depth, or you have another learning activity and 10% or 1% learn about networking. If you have another learning activity where 80% learn about thermometers to a deep, to a level, 10% learn it to an incredibly much deeper level, and you've got another percentage now looking at another metric of networked knowledge, neural knowledge, that overall is going to win overall. Even so, it's like investment or anything like that, that we have to invest in in it. And like inquiry knowledge, you obviously get a hit in a time scale that can't keep up against traditional teaching. So traditional teaching will get you, if you test someone traditionally teaching a fully switched on all the conditions right, traditionally teaching will beat inquiry-based teaching within a certain metric of time and space, but overall it's not felt to deliver some more complex and nuanced things like this sort of neural, so you yourself are a neural network. Now the ten senses correspond to your 10 temperature sensors on your fingers, and the actual pressure sensor corresponds to the two, so it's got two nostrils in it, and the weight sensor corresponds more closely to how you feel it. Like, you can feel the weight, but sort of your different muscles in your hands are doing it. It's a much closer analog to yourself. It's sort of a digitization of the actual child. That sort of makes sense, that there are these fingers, and that you can, while a child can move their hand around an object and feel it hot here and cold here, this allows you to do it. And also part of the necessary thing is that you have to have concentration, but you've also got to have concentration management, where you divide up what you're doing to do it. So in theory, you can pay attention the entire time. At a certain point in time, you have to listen to your kid, your friends, listen to the lunch bell, listen to the teacher giving instructions. So in essence, you can go and do it. This is sort of making it, if you like, a super child. That is, rather than 10 fingers, 10 temperature sensors. So it mimics more, it's more closely aligned with the psychology of the child. Now, the overall point is that the actual, it's very hard to claim that this is disingenuous to claim being Australian disingenuous to claim that this promotes inquiry in a fashion, in a way that was not used in the creation of it. And so the idea is this casual transfer of your senses to the actual digital senses, a casual transfer in a relaxed way actually mimics natural starting point. So people will be playing and they will notice something. So the process is to actually bring up awareness to make your experiment digitally aware, as you are scientifically aware, and then do some processing afterwards. So that's exactly what's happened here, and a lot of innovation and induction, when they really look beneath the surface, a lot of people read a paper which critiques it, and at the end of it they have the diagram, the scientific method, but they neglect to say that there are papers which contest that this scientific method is actually the way that it happens, that in reality there is this the senses are always on, and inspiration happens. It just means that when inspiration happens, you've got more light beams, like every sensor shines a light beam into your generality, which allows you to intersect it. Now, so there's this entire process that this general Pacific thing allows sequential deduction, that if this is this, therefore tracks where something is into the middle of a generality, so you can go from general to specific. So there's the sensor actually illuminates an area of general thought, and so this allows you to more accurately go down to a specific inquiry, a reasoned, a stable thing that given the uniformity capacity thing, that further investigations are no longer necessary. This is the idea that a coroner provides a level of insight and thoroughness which demands that explanation. And we set a certain level that consideration of what that Pacific is consistent. In general, a coroner viewpoint or any test has to be sufficient to get up and give it a socially accepted solution. In science, it's a little bit different in terms of that the generality is of is novel, and your specifics map into a generality on a mechanism to go in there, and you're testing the health of the generality, and therefore your pool of generalities increase. Now, it can increase in terms of your overall as a social thing, which is the science community, or it can be a private thing. So to get back, I'm going to have to get a mate. I'm going to have to right, see you. And so that's someone who did our plumbing for us, ripped us off right nicely, but you know, it's a local, so you don't really care as much. keeps him in his looks like, so he's having some sort of Turkish kebab there at the moment. Hello. I really think that I needed to walk and get this cleared out, and I would say to actually look at where I'm stuck. A good 30% of what I'm looking at is contradictory or inadequate, and so that inadequate stuff can't be actually transformed. I could take someone's inadequate paper for various reasons, and it's inadequate in as much that I'm adding new information to it, but it can't transform forward. Then there's sort of another 30% is where the actual intellectual power to actually sustain these linearized arguments sort of wanes. I was actually really burning out, because as I've sort of said, this argument, this thing is not going to go. I don't have the actual revision of it sufficiently to burn in why it's wrong and what's wrong with it. And then sort of finally the actual way forward is to actually structure it in this advanced, I suppose, well, it's not advanced math, it's a sort of fundamental maths where a question has multiple answers and you go through this thread, and what often happens is that you realize that you're on different branches to go through, and sort of different there are different branches, and even then people have made the assumption for the sake of argument that these branches don't have answers. So the idea of a more neural way of inquiry, where as a community and an individual you are taking in information, assessing it from all sources all the time and communicating it all the time. And this is, you know, what really happens. You're in the wild, animals can come at you from different directions, problems can come over you, whether it's all random stuff. So this, the ability of any neural network is to be monitoring all eyes out all the time. Go ahead, if you were an animal which didn't evolve this, you'd be picked off. You know, people would go in your blind spot, you'd have a simple recipe to be always hunted, you'd be, you know, domesticated. And in a certain sense, there is an idea that in education that we wind up domesticating our thinkers so that we can control them, and that they will always come back for more. They will behave, they will do various things to go across. So in a sense, one has to say that education has achieved a positive social result, and that is the domestication of intellect. And domestication of intellect means reliable. A horse will reliably pull a carriage. A cow will reliably walk up and get milked. Because there is a certain amount of training to do it, so it's that training education level. Once you want your horse to actually start do other things, like the horse no longer has to pull a carriage, it's got to paint and create and stuff like that. It's process going across, and it really seems that people have sort of developed an educational domestication process, and then when it doesn't work, it can be fixed, and that is more more wheels added to it, more steering wheels added to it, even though it's very much on a set of rails to go in one direction. It's sort of like putting a steering wheel on a train and hoping that you can actually move it in another direction. Now, again, if I can just say about it, in terms of creative process, just talking about this for, let's have a look, little look about how long I've talked about it, is going an hour and 4 minutes. Yeah, talking about it for an hour and 4 minutes, it's actually fundamentally saying this, like, I can imagine an opening statement is that we've developed education basically as rolling stock. You know, things turn up at stations, you know, it's timetable, it's rolling stock with the Industrial Revolution, and people are trying to add basically a steering wheel to a train and noticing it's non-responsive because it's stuck on the tracks. I think it's a beautiful way to introduce it to her, and you know, that's a new way. The other way is to say, oh, hang on, this is a sort of analog of the student. So the sensor station is an analog of the student, and it also marries up with the student experience of inquiry being a neural process and a social process that is inquiries always on. Now, there's two aspects of it. This is sort of the nature of inquiry, but also whether your inquiry leads. Whether your inquiry leads to sane inquiry. So there's this entire thing is that education is an investment. So we do know that education is an investment, either direct or indirect. Indirect, it leads to just greater wealth. People tend to generate more wealth. If they're educated, they generate more social wealth and more sort of personal wealth. That is, by managing their assets a little bit better, by making sort of critical life decisions, that small kick up there. But nonetheless, in this age that we pay some incredible quantity of money, I would hazard to guess per child, given our education budget, several billion dollars a year. I think you'd be looking at per child a good fraction of $1 million per child, and we're making that investment. Now, there's certain investments you make which are insurance investments, that if you don't do it, and things think bad things will happen, sort of like is paying fire insurance going to affect the likelihood of your house burning down? Well, sort of indirectly, in terms of that you will have people sort of assessing about the risk of your house burning down. Sort of, say, if you know, basically have a thatched roof in the mountains, and you know, the Blue Mountains with certain things, people will observe that just because it's an activity, and because it's sort of competitive activity, in that people are paying premiums, and if someone is wasteful of that premium, is exposing themselves to a great risk. So there's a sort of an indirect pressure to improve improve education going forward. Yeah, so I think I'll start again writing this up, and it's just going to be one massive hit. There's a sort of a series of it's almost time to get another Arduino board and slowly get up the units separately. At the moment, what's happening is that I have the main Mega Arduino board, but it means that I have to stop development, sort of dewire it to go ahead. I really need that as to actually start putting that in as a production prototype. But it turns out that the Mega Arduino boards are actually cheaper than the Uno ones. I don't know why that is, coming out of being just been belched out of China. I really need to start writing this up in a way, and just see if I can cogitate to get this across. I think there is, in terms of an introduction, getting back to it. So I've got sort of useful development work I can do, particularly in measuring, using the a little ADD chips. Now, an ADD chip costs, for 10 differential ADD, differential ADD channels, costs a fraction of a dollar. And that's 24 bit. This is sort of incredible stability. So I'll have to go and do that. But however, I think the first introduction thing is that we've really, you can think of the education system as being built in the time of the railroads, and the tracks have been laid to go a certain direction, and people are trying to figure out whether we can actually put a steering wheel in it, that is, give people a new set of maps and directions, and the steering wheel rail gets that point going out. And then there's sort of like many models, not models of inquiry. It is actually fairly, although there's much written about it, the actual mechanism of inquiry and how it operates is at one aspect more fixed than people think, and another aspect more open to question. Like, it's more fixed in terms of the way it's well understood how it operates on knowledge. So it's well understood how a coroner uses inquiry to achieve a job, and how a scientist uses inquiry to a slightly different job. So a coroner has a theory to what this means, what the specifics means, so they're they're upgrading qualifying information that is freely available, whereas a scientist is upgrading knowledge. They're both using inquiry, and the processes are really understood. So in people's definitions not getting there, that's a problem with the definitions. However, the actual psychological process of inquiry is it's misleading to actually take a scientific method, because the actual history is that scientific methods, there's certain aspects of it, that scientific method is actually not used by scientists. There is this always-on blinding inspiration, that aha moment of scientists. And there's also the process there. So that being said, by digitizing something, you can actually put the two sort of move it into the child's space in several ways. One is that the senses correspond to their senses, and the sensors corresponds to their senses and on the fingers and stuff like that, and then the basic, so rather than stopping a mode of inquiry, you access the natural level of inquisitiveness. So inquiry is inquisitive, and essentially all children have to be inquisitive, and initially because they have no general knowledge, it has to be a process of induction, and that process is a complex thing, and so they build up their general knowledge, and then they build up the large body of general knowledge. So this qualification of inductive qualification of their general knowledge, the general perception, is done by science as a whole, but it's replicated on a smaller scale. So the actual process of science is quite legitimately goes on. Science presumes an ignorance. Now, and we have to actually, for professional scientists, we have to have a full ignorance check. That is to say, we do not know this. If we do, it's not scientific knowledge. But for a child, you basically have to test or question: do they know? Do they know things are coming up? So hopefully, we'll get through on that. So I think I do have the, after all this, after an hour of walking, the actual basis of what I'm going to do for this introduction, that is the big sweeping statement introduction. It's not that people, the introduction in old papers was a picture or a poem, something which just softens your entry point for it. So if you just suddenly start off reading someone a shopping list, a recipe list, without saying, look, we've got guests coming tonight, here's the meal, what do you think? You've got to introduce it. Now, in the old days, they had books. It was in the book, and you'd open a page, and people, before they read it, would read the poem. And say in documentaries, you've got basically grand shot, grand shot, David Attenborough speaks, grand shot, grand shot, and a bit more. So we know there. So I think there's sort of the grand shot is looking at saying the analogy, sort of teaching an analogy of saying, and we could say people from the railway company suggest putting in steering wheels, whereas independently we're looking at giving people a personal science inquiry GPS. Isn't that beautiful? I think that would actually do it. And it's amazing that these statements are really buried in there after a lot of thinking. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.